This is Chef John Falls welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio, and inviting you to join us at the kitchen table for another hour of adventures in food. Each week, we travel from the back roads of Louisiana to the streets of Europe's capitals, delving into food. We talk with chefs, food historians, authors, and producers. We search out current trends, revive forgotten traditions, and y'all, we might even cook for you. It's fruitcake season and stolen panettone and mincemeat pie, too. So folks, get ready to chop the pecans, grate the nutmeg, and soak those cherries for the best desserts of the year. Join me, Chef John Falls, and Isabel Kurt of Mondo Fruitcake as we talk about Christmas sweets on Stirring It Up next. But first, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Barbara Klein. A 17-year-old high school student is hospitalized in critical condition after another student shot her yesterday at Colorado's Arapahoe High School. Arapahoe County Sheriff Grayson Robinson says in addition to brandishing a shotgun, the shooter was well-armed.
The individual also had a bandolera of multiple rounds of shotgun ammunition strapped across his body, and he was also armed with a machete, a very large knife. The individual also carried a backpack with him as he entered the school. We now know as a result of our investigation that inside that backpack were three incendiary devices.
Robinson says the 18-year-old gunman purchased the shotgun legally. Meanwhile, Newtown, Connecticut is marking the first anniversary of the shooting rampage at Sandy Hook Elementary School, which left 26 people dead. Houses of worship rang bells at 9:30 this morning, the time that Adam Lanza shot his way into the school. Members of Nelson Mandela's family are holding an overnight vigil in the South African village of Kounou on the eve of his funeral. Kounou is Mandela's hometown. His coffin was handed over to the family today after being transported through crowds gathered at the roadside, as the BBC's Mike Wooldridge reports.
Nelson Mandela came home today after a final ceremonial send-off from an airbase near Pretoria, where his body had been lying in state. The military plane that brought him here to the town of Umtata was received with formal ceremony too. But as the hearse containing Nelson Mandela's coffin, draped in the South African flag, set off for Kounou, where the funeral would take place, the people of the Eastern Cape took over to give him their send-off. A farewell for the local herdsboy who fought apartheid and became president, and who they saw as their own.
The BBC's Mike Wooldridge. In the Gaza Strip, at least 5,000 people have been evacuated from their homes as floodwaters rise. From Jerusalem, NPR's Emily Harris reports an extreme winter storm is crippling Israel and Palestinian territories.
Gazan authorities turned schools into makeshift shelters. 18 members of Ala Al-Jerzi's family are sleeping in one classroom. My house completely flooded, she says. We went to a relative's house, and the first floor there flooded. They rescued us with boats. We left with just the clothes we were wearing. Israel restricts products entering Gaza, but allowed four water pumps and extra fuel in due to this emergency. The storm also knocked out electricity for tens of thousands of people in Israel and the West Bank. Major roads in and out of Jerusalem were closed Saturday for the third day. Emily Harris, NPR News, Jerusalem.
This is NPR. The U.S. military says a Navy-guided missile cruiser in the South China Sea had to take evasive action to avoid colliding with a Chinese warship last week. The U.S. Pacific Fleet says the USS Cowpens was operating in international waters close to China's new and only aircraft carrier. Another Chinese warship pulled in front of the Cowpens and stopped, forcing the emergency maneuver. The incident comes as tensions grow between Washington and Beijing over China's newly declared air defense zone in the East China Sea. An unmanned Chinese spacecraft landed on the moon today, according to Chinese state-run media. From Shanghai, NPR's Frank Langfitt reports it's the first so-called soft landing on the moon since 1976.
This morning, China joined the U.S. and the former Soviet Union as only the third country to manage a soft landing on the moon. A soft landing is in contrast to a controlled crash landing, which China has already accomplished. The spacecraft is expected to deploy a solar-powered rover called the U-2, or Jade Rabbit in Mandarin. The rover, which has six wheels and weighs a little over 300 pounds, will explore an area known as the Bay of Rainbows, digging into the moon's surface and conducting geological surveys. China's military-backed space program is a point of national pride. When the spacecraft touched down, the control room at the Aerospace Control Center in Beijing burst into applause. Frank Langford, NPR News, Shanghai.
Iran also had success in space today. According to state media, Iran sent a monkey 72 miles above Earth aboard its first liquid-fueled rocket and returned it to Earth safely. The mission is part of Tehran's program aimed at manned spaceflight. I'm Barbara Klein, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Kresge Foundation, expanding opportunities in America's cities at kresge.org.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, a public service of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. Find us on Facebook at KRVS Public Media.
This week on Local Produce Live at Cypress Lake Studios, a new video from Fofale, Petit dans la vie farouche, only on KRVS.org. KRVS, keeping South Louisiana music live.
Chef John Falls welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. All right, everybody, welcome to Stirring It Up, the best tasting and cultural show on radio. We're so happy to have you with us, and I'd like to begin by welcoming Michelle York, our executive producer. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you so much for asking. And you?
Things going well?
Yes, indeedy.
Just want to make sure about that.
And you?
Everything's going good. Everything's going good. I got a lot to talk about today.
We're ready to listen.
Well, and keeping us alive and well across that glass wall right there is Dean Slama, our engineer. Keeps that music good. Got good music for us today?
Oh, I got some great selections. Yeah. Can't wait to play them.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Can't wait to hear them.
You know, our listeners always comment on the music. That's all in your court over there. So, I mean,
they must be thinking somebody else is doing the music.
I take credit for it. Y'all, before I get into the big topic today, I must remember that today is December the 7th, Pearl Harbor Day. And, of course, that's the day that the United States was drawn into World War II with the bombing of Pearl Harbor. And today, like most days, we must thank and never forget those who gave their lives and those who go out and fight for our country and protect our freedoms every single day. So we on Stirring It Up say thanks in a big, big way to all of our veterans out there and all of those who are wearing the uniform today to make sure that we can have a safe and happy and holy holiday season, because you are out there watching out for us. We thank you so very much, and thanks to all of the families who lost their loved ones in the bombing of Pearl Harbor. What a horrible day that was, a day that will live in infamy. So, Michelle.
Yes.
3 weeks to go to Christmas. How's that big shopping going? I mean, how's that big shopping going?
You mean, do I have your gift yet?
How's that big shopping going? However you wish to interpret that.
Well, you know, sometimes it's a little hard to get started, and sometimes there are a few people on your list that you just don't quite know what to get. You know, for the man who has everything, including being surrounded by fabulous people all the time, what do you get them?
I don't know, Slama. I don't know. I'm fighting to get you something, too. I'm not sure what it's all about.
Oh, guys.
I know you don't want us to fight that hard, I'm sure. I'm Charles Stovehounds out there fighting the same battle you are.
Absolutely. I know that they are.
Well, I'm easy. I am very easy. I'm easy. Whatever you buy for me, I'm going to love. And Slama, I am happy to say,
yeah,
I have Michelle's Christmas gift already.
Oh, wow. Really?
That's exactly right. Didn't I tell you I had it already?
Well, you said birthday. Am I getting a double duty gift?
Well, your birthday and Christmas is 2 days apart. I mean, give me a break. 2, 3, 4 days apart.
Five.
Slama, you know what I mean?
Five.
I hate people who plan pregnancies around double presents in December.
Oh, I don't think they're planned.
You don't, huh? Well, I mean, you always get me stuff I love. I mean, you know what I like.
Hmm? Well, I'm working on it. Hmm? I'm working on it.
You working on something?
Yeah.
Well, I know what's always on your Christmas list. You're a woman of the written word, and books are your passion. So I'm always looking in that. But that is such an expected gift for you. I always have that as lanya, even though they're masterpieces that everybody would love to have.
Those are kind of stocking stuffers.
Yeah,
for
stocking
me.
Stuffers of quite a lot of expense, I might add.
Expensive stocking stuffers.
Yeah, because she doesn't like some little old book. No, it's got to be some rare antique by some great author. That I don't mind, is what I'm saying.
Is that what you're saying? First editions are special.
Mm-hmm.
First editions are special. But, you know, books are an excellent holiday gift. If it's got pages of beautiful color photographs and artwork with great recipes, you know that's a winner.
You mean like my book?
Like
our books.
Thank you. But I do think cookbooks are an exceptional Christmas gift, or any gift time of the year. There always seems to be a new crop of them coming out right around this time of year.
Well, you're right about that. And they cover such an array of culinary topics, too, from local cuisine to far-off regions of the world, everything in between. The great news is that books never, ever go out of fashion. And cookbooks, certainly, even if you're not a cook, you need a book worse than anyone. So you need a cookbook worse than anyone. And somebody said, well, I don't get a lot of cookbooks. I don't know how to cook. I said, well, you know, that's why they gave us a little reading book in first grade, because we didn't know how to read.
Yes.
So, you know, they started us off that way, you know. But so I remind them of that, Michelle.
You know, there's a book that came out recently called An Italian Palate. It was written by Chef Robert St. John. It's a big coffee table book. It features gorgeous watercolor paintings that were inspired by Italian landscapes, along with delicious recipes that Robert collected on his travels through the countryside. I love books with a story within the story. You know, you might say that you could judge the book by the cover, because it truly is exceptional. You mentioned international. On the more exotic side of international, and I don't even know if I'm saying this right, the pok-pok?
Yeah, pok-pok.
Thai food is really popular right now, but not many of us know how to prepare it. So the author gives a lot of insights into the essence of Thai food and the people, the cultural narratives in there. Wonderful regional recipes. It's quite an interesting book if you're looking for somebody on your list.
Well, you know, being Louisiana authors, you and I do so much work on the history of Louisiana, but I just recently purchased a cookbook by our friend Lauren Godin. Remember,
That's
Lauren, right?
Absolutely.
New Orleans Chef's Table, Extraordinary Recipes from this storied Louisiana city. And for me, the first line of the introduction says it all. In New Orleans, we can be eating a meal while talking about another meal and simultaneously planning the next meal. Food obsessed. That's what we are.
Yes.
That's great. It spotlights recipes from restaurants in mid-city to the warehouse district. There's even a mention of a place called Restaurant Revolution in the French Quarter.
Yeah, I think I've heard of that
You've heard of that one? Yeah, well, I guess you should have, huh? Well, I mean, how can you do a great New Orleans recipe book and not include our Restaurant Revolution? I'm sorry. But I am proud that she did that.
Absolutely.
But it is a great book, and certainly I know Louisianians are always looking for Louisiana's new books at the holiday time.
Mm-hmm.
So this is certainly going to be a great choice. Lauren Godin's New Orleans Chef's Table.
And, you know, sometimes I get into a little, you know, frenzy, thinking, oh, I'm going to bake bread. Yeah, I want to learn how to make beer. And I'm sure there's probably somebody on your list like that. If so, you might consider The New Artisan Bread in 5 Minutes a Day, a cookbook by Jeff Hertzberg and Zoe Francois. It's the 2013 revised edition of their bestseller that now includes a gluten-free chapter, which is more and more important to everybody. New photographs, new recipes, and the authors have truly perfected artisan bread recipes, fast and delicious results. And this is a book I got for Christmas a few years ago, The Cook's Illustrated Cookbook.
Oh, cool.
Do you see it? I brought it in today.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a fabulous book. Wow.
It came out in 2011, but it's certainly worthy of putting on your Christmas list. Compilation of recipes from the magazine Cook's Illustrated. They're known as America's Test Kitchen because their recipes are all tested for accuracy, best results. It's not a picture book. So, I mean, you could look at it and think, there are a lot of words in here. But 2,000 pre-tested recipes of all types, so you're guaranteed success.
When Cook's Illustrated came out, I mean, it was an immediate sensation because it did what no other magazine did, and that is it dissected every recipe. If butter went into the dish, there was a huge discussion. What kind of butter is best? How much water is in it? All of a sudden, things started to really make sense.
And they do little tips in there, too, which are so great. No, like skillets, what size skillet is best? And they do a whole little dissertation on why a 12-inch skillet is perfect for the kitchen.
Good. Cook's Illustrated, like I say, a great publication, very good instruction, and that book. And again, I might mention that even though this book was put out a couple of years ago, I'm sure you can find it's available. And believe me, it's like a book that will always remain in vogue because it's instructional and the facts are always the facts in cooking. They're never going to change. Styles change and fads come and go, but cooking technique and what makes an egg fry and what makes it burn and what makes butter scorch and smoke will never change. The facts are the facts, right, and that's what Cook's Illustrated is all about. And you know, another idea for the foodie on your list, a foodie magazine subscription. What about that?
You know? I think that's a fabulous idea, and a lot of magazines have, you know, if you're trying to be thrifty, sometimes you can get a magazine for yourself and you get a free gift subscription. I'm just saying. So if you get a gift subscription from me, just...
You see, if I get
know that it's the thought.
If I get a subscription magazine from her, I'm gonna know it was free. I'm gonna know she invested nothing in. But that's a great idea, Michelle. I mean, that's really a great idea because if you know someone loves to cook, magazines can be expensive, especially the high glossy, beautifully written magazines. Savour is one of my favorites. Some of the most interesting Stirring It Up guests or contributors to Savour magazine. You know, our Halloween show just recently had Alec was on, remember?
Alec LeBron.
Yeah, and I mean, he had an article in Savour about Transylvania countryside and foods he ate along the way. So remember, y'all, you can get those subscriptions now. So come January, those magazines are delivered to the door and that gift starts giving immediately, right?
Absolutely. Another of our favorite magazines is Louisiana Kitchen and Culture.
Oh, great magazine. All Louisiana.
It is a great magazine. They feature everything from our favorite cooks, timely articles on what's being grown, caught, cooked, who's who on the culinary scene, restaurants, chefs, updates on culinary festivals. So, yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you, magazine subscriptions. That's awesome. There's another book that I really like. The New Food Lover's Companion, 5th edition. I mean, I keep this on my shelf. It has every definition of every food type possible in this book. Wow, so, I mean, it's certainly an excellent resource for us when we're working on cookbooks, but it's an interesting read. I mean, I've heard people say, oh, just read the dictionary, and you think, I'm going to have to be really bored to do that. But this is interesting. I mean, it's really a culinary dictionary. It has all the international foods. It's quite a little cultural and culinary lesson.
Well, anything you want to know, if you're stumped with any word or what is a stroganoff, you can believe it will be in-depth in there.
Because you wonder sometimes, you think you know what a stroganoff is, but try to tell somebody what it is.
Anyway, y'all, once again, Dean's telling me it's time to stop and take a break here. We're going to be right back. Michelle is going to introduce a fascinating guest that you will be very happy you hung around for. We'll be right back.
A yearly Christmas nightmare has just come back again. It was harder than the head of Uncle Bucky, heavy as the sermon of Preacher Lucky. Once enough to give the whole state of Kentucky a great big belly ache. It was denser than a drove of barnyard turkeys, tougher than a truckload of all beef jerky, drier than a drought in Albuquerque, Grandma's killer fruitcake.
Yeah. glide through your weekday mornings at 11 a.m. here on the Medicine Ball Caravan. I'm Cecil Doyle. Mondays through Thursdays, we cruise through a fast-paced hour of sounds both old and new, as well as keeping you up to date with area music and arts. The Medicine Ball Caravan, 11 to noon weekdays here on KRVS.
Hi, this is Nick Forster. Every week in E-Town, we bring together musicians from a wide range of styles for some great live performances and conversation. And we also present the Achievement Award to someone doing outstanding work in their communities. It's an hour of uplifting stories and music each week on E-Town.
Tuesday at noon on KRVS.
Some of the world's oldest festivals were held around the middle of winter. The ancient Celts thought the midwinter sun stood still for 12 days. Our music on the Thistle and Shamrock never does, and this week it'll lighten and brighten the shortest days of the year. Join me.
Coming up Sunday evening at 6, here on KRVS.
Everybody, welcome to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio, the best cultural show on radio. We're so happy to have you with us as we're talking about Christmas sweets today. Michelle and I am just an addict to Christmas sweets. I cannot help myself. I hate to say it, even though I went to Christmas Sweets Anonymous meetings for quite a while. It's no help at all. The tigatos keep creeping into my dreams. The fruitcake keeps showing up. Anyway, it's great to have all of you with us, and thanks so much for sitting around the kitchen table with us today. No better place on cold days than around the table with a cup of coffee and talking food.
That's it.
And we have a great guest joining us today,
we
right?
We do. We do. We have Isabel Kirk with us today of Mondo Fruitcake blog fame. Isabel developed a passion for fruitcake at a very early age when she first tasted the one made by the Gethsemane monks in Trappist, Kentucky.
Oh, one of my favorite. I even went there and got one from Brother Chris, who was the fruitcake maker at the time.
Well, Isabel's blog, Mondo Fruitcake, she also has a Mondo Fruitcake Facebook site. Both are dedicated to the exchange and sharing of all things fruitcake. So, John, we need to sign you up.
I am going to sign up.
Isabel reviews commercially made fruitcakes, the good, the bad, and the exceptional. And she also does taste tests on the fruitcake kits. Her followers consist of fruitcake fanatics, as well as those who will willingly confess that they do love fruitcake. She calls these folks the silent minority.
I love that.
Her mission is to change America's attitude toward the fruitcake. She is a resident of Chicago with a master's degree in training and development from Roosevelt University. When she's not blogging about her passion, fruitcakes, she is working in human resources at Rotary International in Evanston, Illinois. Isabel, welcome to Stirring It Up. It is great to have you with us today talking about fruitcake.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here among my brethren.
Absolutely. Now, you live in Evanston, and you know Rick Tramato, my partner in Restaurant Revolution in New Orleans, you know, of the famous True Restaurant Group, he lives in Evanston, Illinois as well. I didn't know if you knew that or not, or if you know Rick Tramato. Do you know him?
I do not know him as a friend, but I have definitely been to his restaurant.
Great guy. He and I are good friends. Well, Isabel, welcome, and what a noble task you have set out to do on your blog to defend the deliciousness, the wonderful, the incredible fruitcake, and hopefully convert non-believers to this school of thought that we're all in. What got you started on this quest? What day did you say, it will be my role?
Mission.
To make people realize that fruitcake is a rare and traditional delicacy. When did that happen?
Well, I always grew up with grapefruit cake. My mother, every year at Christmas time, she's always ordered the cakes from the Gethsemane Monastery. So I've always grown up with grapefruit cake, so I never thought that fruit cake was a bad thing. So it was around 2005, I wanted to start a blog, I wanted to get out there on the internet. And I thought, well, what could I possibly talk about? And I thought, well, here's something. I love fruitcake, but I never hear anything nice said about fruitcake. Why does everyone hate fruitcake? So I thought, well, maybe there's a reason for it. So I thought, well, I'll see if there is indeed a reason. I'll start reviewing and tasting the different fruitcakes that are out there and are available to people. So what I've done since 2005 then is reviewed the different fruitcakes that you can purchase in stores and online. I've eaten at least 32 fruitcakes since then. I have reviewed mostly commercially made ones, and I understand there are some fruitcakes out there that you should avoid, and those might be the ones spreading these bad reputations.
But, you know, we can also say the same for veal Oscar or for ribeye steaks or filet mignon. I mean, every food group has folks who do it in a bad way. Why is it, though, that this unbelievable non-truth holds steady every year to the fruitcake? I wonder why that is, when there's so many other bad foods that people could compare preparation to.
I blame Johnny Carson.
You're so right. I forgot about that.
It was that one joke, and it's amazing how much cultural power he has, and it was that one joke about the fruitcake that has caused this, and I would say plus with the reputation of some of these commercially made fruitcakes that just are not very well done. They use poor ingredients, and so people are receiving these fruitcakes that don't taste good. There's this idea that it's not a good idea to like fruitcake, and so people just haven't tried it. I've actually run into quite a few people who make fun of it, joke about it, yet when they admit they've never tasted fruitcake.
And, you know, that was the case with me for years and years. I remember when I first started working for John many years ago and we were brainstorming about Christmas shows. And I said, yeah, we ought to do one on fruitcake. And kind of laughed about it. And he said, no, that'd be a great show. We need to do a show about fruitcake. And in hearing his passion about fruitcake, I realized, you know, I've never tasted one. Everybody says I don't like fruitcake, or you hear nutty as a fruitcake, or, you know, things like that. And you think, oh, I must not like it, without ever having tried it.
Right.
And Isabel, I luckily was given this fabulous family recipe for this fruitcake that dated back to the 1800s from a woman of German descent who married into a New Orleans family back right after the Civil War and became known for her fruitcakes throughout the family. Now, it was a family tradition that, you know, if you were lucky enough to get a fruitcake from her, because, of course, in those days, everything was handmade, and the cakes were 5 pounds, and so every cake was obviously, by today's standards, $60 to make. So it was difficult to get a taste of that cake, and once I tasted it and I got the recipe, I said, oh, my God, I need to go commercial with this cake. I must go commercial. And then I had what I'm going to call the unfortunate visit, which was actually a fabulous visit to Gethsemane, where I tasted the fruitcake at the hands of the bakers, and they sliced it, and I tasted it, and I said, oh, my God, this, I have a great cake, but why would I make a cake if I could get this one? And then when I saw that you were a big fan of Gethsemane fruitcakes, my God, I know exactly. I said, well, she's a fruitcake lover for sure. But
we are both lucky to have you had the luck to have that wonderful recipe, and I had the luck to grow up with a good fruitcake.
No, it's absolutely true. I was lucky to find they had the recipe.
You know, I mentioned that you review fruitcake kits on your blog, and I have to confess, I'd never even heard of a fruitcake kit. So I looked online, and I see that there's, you know, some fruitcake kits, but tell us about that and what it is, how they work, and how you work out reviewing. Is this just kind of your personal review, or do companies seek you out to review their fruitcakes?
Most of the commercially made fruitcakes that I've reviewed, I've purchased them myself. I didn't want to show any bias.
Mm-hmm.
But I have had a few companies send me fruitcakes to review. With the fruitcake kit, I did actually purchase one. I had never until that time tried my hand at actually making a fruitcake. But what I had heard is that it's a lot of time and effort and money to make a fruitcake. There's a lot of an investment of money in the nuts, in the fruits, and the time it takes, maybe not to bake it, but to age it and to feed it if you're doing one that has alcohol involved. So the fruitcake kit is a nice way to go because you are getting everything that you need to make it without having to spend a lot for maybe larger packages of candied fruit and nuts that maybe you don't need. So it's a good way if you want to start making a fruitcake. It might be a maybe more economical way to get started.
And it tastes pretty good. Does it have the alcohol in it, or is that something that you can add if you choose to season it?
It does not have the alcohol, so that would be up to you. So the one I did a fruitcake kit from King Arthur Flour, and I macerated the fruit in one alcohol, and then I wrapped the fruitcake in a cheesecloth with a different alcohol just to see how that would be. So that's nice. That's up to you as to which.
Well, in rating your fruitcakes, you divide them into categories, naturally, and one is the monastery fruitcake. Tell us about these cakes and how they differ from others.
Sure. I call them monastery fruitcakes, and these tend to be what you think of when you think of a traditional holiday fruitcake. I call them monastery fruitcakes because largely the type of fruitcake are made by monasteries in the United States. And I did a little research. Well, why do monasteries choose to do fruitcake? And it really is one of their income generators. A lot of monasteries create different foodstuffs to sell. Same with the monasteries in France or in Europe. And so a lot of them have chosen to do fruitcake as an income generator. They tend to be very rich, full of fruit, dark, so they might use molasses or brown sugar. They have the macerated fruit. They tend to be very good when it comes to the ingredients. A lot of good ingredients. They use butter, not a lot of preservatives beyond what's in maybe the candied fruit. Really good quality. It all adds up.
You know, I'm looking at online right now, the Gethsemane website, 2.5-pound Kentucky bourbon fruit cake. Oh. 2.5 pounds.
Well, that's
$20 a pound.
That's a half fruit cake. That's a half fruit cake for us.
That's a half fruit cake. Then you make $100 fruit cakes.
Fruit cakes are expensive, and I have actually, I heard someone had tried to make, I think Alton Brown has a fruit cake, and I think they spent $100 just buying all the ingredients. You know, they're heavy cakes, but that's from all the fruit and all the good stuff in them.
Right. Well, my cake, really, my 5-pound cake this year cost $62 and about 50 cents. It's almost $63 for a single cake. And that was another deterrent for me going commercial.
Right. You love fruit cake so much that I heard you chose that as your wedding cake. And at first, you know, you might think, well, that's an off-the-wall decision, but it's actually not. It's fairly traditional. I didn't realize that Kate Middleton and Prince William actually had fruitcake as their choice of wedding cake. Did you know that, John? I didn't remember hearing that at the time of the wedding.
Because it gave all this new credence and love of fruitcake. Even though England loves fruitcake, all of a sudden it became very popular, and all the stores sold out of fruitcake the week they got married.
So was it a common thing at one time, Isabel, for wedding cakes to actually be fruitcakes?
They were, yeah. You know, any major life event, for anything like that, there tends to be special foods associated with it. And again, in the past, dried fruits, spices, all those things were quite rare or special. So for a wedding cake, they would make fruitcakes. And it is still a tradition in England. So right, it isn't that far off. And I've actually had the recipe that Kate and William had is out there on the web, and I've had it, and it's delicious. I had a slightly different one, a lighter one, a Dundee cake, which a friend of mine made, and it's very much a tradition. I when I was looking into having a fruitcake as a wedding cake, which my husband, by the way, does not like fruitcake, so God bless him for allowing that to happen. But when I was doing research on it, I started looking at it. I have a few older cookbooks laying around, and the older ones, when you start to look it up and you look up wedding cake, it will be a cake with fruit and nuts in it. So it is not your typical, like, white cake with frosty frosting and the older ones. It was somewhere around the middle of the century where that started to evolve, to come from a rich fruit cake to maybe more of a spice cake with nuts in it, to now what we traditionally think of as the bride's cake, sort of a lighter cake.
Well, I thought about it because the traditional Southern or New Orleans, let me say, wedding cake, up to probably the 1900s, early 1900s, was always a white cake with pineapple filling and coconut. It was a coconut cake, basically. Mm-hmm. And to have a traditional wedding cake in New Orleans from the antebellum period to postbellum after the Civil War onto the 1900s, a wedding cake that was not pineapple filled and coconut lined was heresy. You just
disgrace.
Oh my God!
Disgrace in the family.
That marriage would never last.
But I imagine those were the ingredients they used because they were maybe expensive or special?
That's exactly right. They were expensive. They were special. And both of those, the pineapple as well as the coconut, were considered the fruits of hospitality in the plantation in Creole days. So to have those as your wedding cake just showed that you would be a hospitable family and would welcome people into your home, etc. So that was some tradition that went along with it as well. Now, Isabel, how do you get your cakes for review? Do people write in and say they want you to review it? Do you go out and search for them? And just how big has that gotten for you? Is it still fun or is it becoming a lot of work?
No, it's always fun. I have, in the past, I've started purchasing fruitcakes as early as May or June, and I'm sure I raised the eyebrows of all these companies when I put in a request for fruitcake in May or June. By December, I'm burnt out. After Christmas, I just can't eat anymore. I normally go on hiatus from after Christmas to about June or so. So as I've started the blog, I've gotten a lot of, as I said, the silent minority. There's a lot of people who just love fruitcake and who will put in the comments or send me an email saying, oh, you've got to try this one, you've got to try that one. And as a result of that, I've realized there are a lot of fruitcakes out there. So how can there be all these people who say they don't like fruitcake and yet they can support all these different companies making fruitcake? It just doesn't make sense to me. But what I also get sometimes now are the unsolicited fruitcakes where someone has a family recipe, oh, I've grown up with this, I love it, here, just try this, and I end up with a fruitcake just, you know, given to me. I've actually had anonymous fruitcakes sent to me, not too many, though.
Now, one of your categories I see is the Southern fruitcake. When you think about fruitcakes, I would think a lot of them do come from the South, but where do most of these cakes come from? Well, what part of the country is kind of known for their fruitcakes?
The ones that I characterize as Southern style tend to be from Texas or Georgia. And the characteristics of this are, first of all, there's never really booze in them. There's never any alcohol in them. There is one, Wombles in Georgia, that they do put some bourbon in it, I believe, which can only make it better, in my opinion. But there's quite a few fruitcakes that come from Georgia and a few from Texas. And again, the characteristics are that there's a lot of nuts in these, so just feels like a lot more maybe pecans or almonds. They tend to be lighter flavored, not as heavy from brown sugar or alcohol. They are almost more candy-like. So the cake, instead of being more of a cake where that you can see, it tends to be almost more of a candy consistency that serves to hold all the fruits and nuts together.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Quite delicious.
Yeah.
You mentioned on your blog the importance of having a hole in the fruit cake. Are you serious about that or just kind of teasing your audience?
I would consider it a pet peeve, but nothing to keep me from buying a fruitcake. But you know, those things are heavy. They're hard to cut. There's a lot of fruits and nuts in it. So when you have a loaf, that's easy, right? You can put your hand on either side of it to kind of get leverage when you're slicing into it. When you have a fruitcake with a hole, you can sort of do the same thing, sort of set the knife in there, and then it's easy to get that first slice out. But when there's no hole in the middle, you have to kind of get the knife in there and kind of lever it out, and you end up with a very ugly slice.
Break the cake, the first slice, you have to eat yourself because somebody else will eat it. I know exactly.
Oh, I think you had experience with this.
Well, my cake has a hole in the center of it, I guarantee you. So what is the response? I mean, really, are you seeing a growth in people really caring about you wanting to review their cake? Is it something that's just, as I say, a fun at this point that could get extremely serious? Is it serious for you? Where do you place it at this point?
It's a lot of fun, and I get my 15 minutes of fame just about every Christmas time. I mean, there's always someone who's looking at the blog then, and I consider it a service in a way. I mean, there are definitely people, I've had comments of people who've said, oh, I'm so glad you steered me toward this or that fruitcake. It is really delicious. I know someone who's eaten his way through all the fruitcake ratings. He's just gone through each one and tried each one. And I'm really trying to build an awareness of fruitcake, that it's really not a bad thing. There's a lot of good ones out there. You just need to look for them.
Isabel, we're going to take a quick break, and can you hold on and go to the other side of the break with us for just a couple more questions?
Sure thing.
Okay, great. Y'all don't today or go anywhere. There's more to come. And by the way, we're eating a little fruitcake in a minute, so you don't want to miss that. We'll be back in just a second.
Fruitcake! I got a fruitcake! Get my hopes all up!
I want to see you at high noon. Noontime, Thursdays on KRVS 88.7. For rock, roll, rhythm, it's old gold on KRVS. An hour on Thursdays at noontime. Isley Kleinpeter with an invite to join me Thursdays at noon on KRVS 88.7 for Fats Domino, Chuck Berry, Elvis, Carl Perkins, even Dolly Parton.
What's happening musically in Dakar? Joburg, Kinshasa, Port Spain, Havana, Accra, Dar es Salaam, Cairo, Paris, New York. Well, tune in this week and every week to find out on Afropop Worldwide from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday night at 8 on KRVS.
Hi, this is Bill Bowens from The Dirty Rice Show, inviting you to join either Mr. Lee Kleinpeter or myself every Saturday night from 8:30 p.m. until 10 p.m. for Dirty Rice right here on KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, Public Radio for Acadiana.
I love the fact that they're not eating fruitcake without the other one, but not that they're not eating it. You
right,
know what I mean,
yeah.
Slama, huh?
That's the twist there.
That's a good little song. I like that. Snickerdoodles and Blondies, huh? Anyway, welcome back, everybody, to Stirring It Up, the best tasting food and cultural show on radio. We're so happy to have you with us today. We have the guru of Mondo Fruitcake blog fame, of course, Isabel. Thank you so much for being with us again. Now, you just recently did a fruitcake tasting of homemade cakes. Did people send you recipes or did they send you the cakes?
Neither, actually. I have a friend who likes to do these sort of Christmassy events, and so she chose to do a fruitcake tasting. We did one last year with purchased commercially made fruitcakes, and this year she said to her friends, let's everybody make a fruitcake. So we had about six different cakes there. They all just picked the recipe, did some research and picked the recipe and made them and brought them. The cakes ranged from more of those traditional heavier ones to cakes that tasted more like a quick bread but with fruit in it.
Right.
All the way to something that I made, which is called Panforte, which is from Siena, Italy. It originates from there, and it's almost a candy or like a toffee or a nougat. Very delicious.
Wow.
All of them were.
Isabel, if you were going to try to convert a non-fruitcake lover, is there a particular fruitcake that you would suggest that they taste?
I would recommend, I'd probably start with one of the dried fruit cakes as opposed to one that has candied fruit in it, or one of the ones that tastes more like a quick bread. So when I review cakes on the blog, I'll normally say that it tastes like that, you know, like more of like a quick bread, like a banana bread or a cranberry nut loaf, something like that. So there are some that call themselves fruitcakes but taste more like that, and I would say that would be the way to get people into them. Actually, at this fruitcake tasting, there were a couple that were like that. They called themselves fruitcake, but they had cinnamon in the batter. They had maybe dried cranberries, things like that. It was interesting, all the people tasting them said, gosh, I didn't know you could qualify that. You could call that a fruitcake. But fruitcake really is in the eye of the beholder. It's basically a cake with fruit in it. So I would say one of the ones with a dried fruit in it. There is a bakery company in Vermont called Bienfait that makes one with dried fruit. There's also another one, I think they're also in Vermont, called Old Cavendish. So those are both pretty good ones that gets people in without having that sort of heavy, boozy flavor.
Hmm.
What's the future of the fruitcake, you think?
I really feel like fruitcake's time has come. The jokes have been our past, and people, as I said, a lot of people joke about it, but they've never actually tried one. Plus, in this age, there's a lot of, I'm sure you've seen this in restaurants, there's a lot of people who are really looking back at older and richer things. They're doing locally sourced things. They're doing artisanally made things. Restaurants, they're starting to get back into things like organ meats and offal and charcuterie, making their own. I mean, they're really starting to do more of this handmade local food. There's a lot of care given to it. And I think that the fruitcake could be one of those things. There's a couple of people, Robert Lambert, for example, in California, makes a lovely fruitcake where he candies all of his own fruits. He uses exotic citrus like Buddha's hand, and those kind of cakes really taste delicious because you can just taste the love and care that goes into them. So I would say that that is the next wave of fruitcake, is really fruitcake that's handmade and made with care, and you can really taste it.
Well, you know, you may just be the inspiration I need to put my fruitcake out there. You know what I mean, Michelle? Isabel may be the catalyst for me to move
do
forward
it.
Here. Yeah.
Go for it.
And I tell you what I'm going to do. It's all in your hands, Isabel, my future as a fruitcake maker, a commercial fruitcake maker. I do have a full-time bakery. I could bake thousands of cakes if I want to, because I do have a wonderful bakery and bakery team here. Of course, I don't like them fooling with my fruitcake, you understand. But I'm going to send you one of my cakes, and I want you to give me your honest opinion, having tasted all of the greats of the greats. And just all you have to do is say, John, no. Oh, John, absolutely. And I'm going to take your guidance, and next year it's up to you whether the famous false fruitcake, Michelle, gets out onto the shelves of the lucky, you know?
That's
the lucky.
No pressure.
And now, Isabel, don't cause me to go into bankruptcy here by saying, John, you have the best cake. It's not really. You have to be very honest with me. So you be on the lookout for this cake, okay?
I look forward to it. You put a heavy burden on my shoulders, but I look forward to giving it a try.
Anyway, thank you so much for spending time with us today. We've done a couple of fruitcake shows in the past, but I think you were the best guest we had yet on a fruitcake show. We even had to get so many monks on.
Yes, you did.
At one time. But yeah. I have to say, we had a lot of fun with you today, and we appreciate you being with us. And, y'all, we will have all of Isabel's information on our website, jfalls.com, and it'll be right there. So, Isabel, thanks so much, and Merry Christmas to you, okay?
Thank you so much, and Merry Christmas to you.
Okay, good. All right, Michelle, what about books on the subject of fruitcakes?
Well, first, I love this. This book is called Fruitcake, Memories of Truman Capote and Sook by his aunt Marie Rudisill. Now, I think you'll remember Marie as the fruitcake lady.
Oh, I know Marie Rudisill. She's the one who's, oh, my God, she is the
hilarious.
Funniest. She is the funniest woman. Y'all,
she was hilarious.
If you look up Maria Rudisill, R-U-D-I-S-I-L, Slama, make sure you put that on. She's going to come up and be ready to just die laughing, is all I can tell you. She's an advice giver.
Yes, she is. Knowing that she's an advice giver, that even makes her book all that much better. 90-year-old Marie would be asked questions by viewers. This is what you were saying on the Jay Leno show. And she had pull no punches answers that had everybody rolling with laughter. We were rolling in the office the other day. Her book, though, is a collection of sweet memories and even sweeter fruitcake recipes from her cousin Sook's cooking journal, including the one that Sook and Truman Capote used to make each year and distribute to their neighbors in a baby carriage.
You can see that, right?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So it's great. And this is awesome because, like, there's the Queen of Cakes, Chapter 9, Pointers for Fruitcake Baking. There's the Birthday Fruitcake, the Chocolate Fruitcake, the Bride's Fruitcake, the Civil War Fruitcake, the Christmas Fruitcake.
Oh, wow.
Coconut Fruitcake. And it goes on. 79
Goodness.
Fruitcakes. So great. And it's a small little thin book, but very interesting.
Probably at your local library.
Oh,
too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I also wanted to mention another great book called New Orleans Classic Desserts, Recipes from Favorite Restaurants. This was written by Kit Wall. We are a sweets loving people here in Louisiana, and Kit's book is a compilation of all of those that we're best known for. So there are recipes in there from Emeril and Leah Chase and Broussard's. Yep, Kit has you prepared to make any sweet ending to any meal. Both of these, I think, would be great additions to your culture and culinary library. We'll certainly have that information on our website, jfols.com.
I like the back of Marie Rudisill on the back of her book says, any decent dinner ends with dessert, and there is none more worthy and elegant than a fruitcake.
And you know, I've never thought of it a fruitcake as elegant. It seems like it has to have icing for it to be elegant.
Oh, yeah.
Ice a fruitcake?
Well, remember, it's capped with jewels of red and green cherries is. And, you know what I mean, and pecan halves and all of that. Anyway, I love this little book, and I don't have one in my collection, but I'm going to get it. Memories of Truman Capote and Sook Fruitcake. That's a very nice little book right there. What about we hadn't had a chance to talk about our Facebook. Anything happening on that? Oh, by the way, I loaded up all of my Israel Thibodeau melatons. I had a season of Israel Melaton. I was part of the team selected to plant the Israel Thibodeau, the snow white melaton that most people, that many think is the first melaton to come to Louisiana.
Yes.
And I produced on my first planting, which I planted four vines, I produced well over 100 of these magnificent snow-white elegant melatons, and I posted the replanting of the ones for next year. I took the meliton and put them in a dark, cool place and let the roots come out. And
that's how you do it.
I did that first in November, and I just started to put them in the soil. All those pictures on the Facebook, right?
Yeah, come on to our Facebook, y'all. Stovehounds and everyone else, come on. Facebook.com/stirringitupradio. And that's where all our pictures are being posted. We're keeping up with that. I think Mariette's been really good about getting some of that info out there along with those pictures, the snow-white melatons. But yeah, come on by, y'all. Join the conversation about the show. Talk about what's going on, maybe what you'd like to see coming up. I know people have been talking about maybe a mustard show coming up.
Haven't done a mustard show.
Like mustard seed or mustard greens?
Like mustard seed. Like the
condiment. That'd be great.
That'd be good. Now, I have to tell you, you know the president of Stovehound Club, right?
I've heard about this, David Hubble. Dr. David.
Well, let me tell you a story. Yesterday, I walked into my restaurant in New Orleans Revolution, and there were 8 Southern Belles around the chef's table up in the office.
Mm-hmm.
When I walked up, everybody said, "Chef, chef, there's a group of girls in the office that's been waiting for you." And I said, "Wow, okay."
Just another Monday,
nothing
right?
Nothing new here. So anyway, Michelle, I walked in, and I could tell immediately they were from the South. Because
what gave them away?
They were stunningly beautiful.
That'll give you away.
All of them. They were Southern girls. I could tell. You know, there's nothing like them. You talk about fruitcake. nothing like these girls. Anyway, one girl jumped up. And she came on over to him, and she says, "I'm David Hubble's cousin."
Oh, check that out.
And she said, "David said to tell you hello." And I said, "Thank him that he did." Anyway, I want to thank all of those wonderful, beautiful girls from Mobile Bay who came into Revolution and had a great time. And they were wonderful, wonderful people. We had a good time.
I wanted to throw in a comment that we got on our Facebook, a recent post from Diver Doug, just saying, and I'll go through it real quick, kind of a long post, but he's just saying, "Thanks for building the restaurant Revolution." He said, "The food and atmosphere and courteous staff made both meals a highlight in my life." And he wanted to mention Chris behind the bar, saying that he should be commended because he's truly an asset to the establishment.
My bartenders, they're good guys. Good guys and girls. So, Slama, you know, in light of Christmas coming, I have my purple plum tart. Now, you know, isn't purple plums associated with Christmas? You know, plums.
Plum pudding.
Plum pudding. I mean, when you think of plums, normally in parts of the world, absolutely. Purple plums are beautiful Christmas dessert, and they're available in the stores this time of year. And I got this recipe. You know, I like to tell people, I'm more proud to say that these recipes that I use often in my cookbooks as well as here today are given to me by great Louisianians who are fabulous cooks. They're traditional in their recipes and cooking. They're proud to share their recipes. So I'm proud to share the traditions of their own family. And Gaston and Olga Hirsch arrived in the United States right after World War II. They settled in Donaldsonville, 45 miles west of New Orleans. The Hirsches were both trained in the restaurant and hotel business. Gaston's family own La Marne, a grand hotel in Savarin, France. And Olga's family own La Forestière, a family restaurant in the town of Lorraine. So you were near Alsace-Lorraine. Mm-hmm. Here they were German-French. And her specialties were pâtés, terrines, and tarts. And when I opened Malafitte's Landing in Donaldsonville back in 1978, she walked through the door one day with a purple plum tart and said in her really French accent that I really needed to upgrade my desserts, that bread pudding and cheesecakes were not enough for a fine restaurant. And she says, and I am here to teach you how to do it. So she was my pastry teacher. This is her recipe, which I'm going to have on the website, for the crust, which is magical, the crust for this tart. 1 1/3 cups of flour, 1/4 pound of chipped butter, 1 tablespoon of sugar, so it's a slightly sweet crust. You put those in a bowl of a Cuisinart. You shake them around for 1 minute, just pulse it. Then slowly drizzle in 1/4 cup of ice water, not with ice, but just cold water, until the flour creates a ball, forms a ball, and rolls around once. Do not overwork it. The minute it comes together and forms a ball in the food processor, immediately pull it out, press it into a firm ball, because it's going to all be mixed well, and let it rest for a couple of minutes, covered in clear wrap, and then press it down into a 9-inch pie crust and fit it into a tart pan. You know what a tart pan is, huh, Michelle? Straight edge with the little, it's not like a pie.
I was going to say crimped edge.
A pie pan is fluted out, and a tart pan is straight up with the little things in them.
Gotcha.
Little ridges. Anyway, she took 12 ripe purple plums, cut them with a paring knife into slices, and mixed that with 2 tablespoons of sugar, and then she created a custard in the next bowl with 1/4 cup of heavy whipping cream, 2 eggs, 1/2 cup of sugar, you can see it's sweet, 1 tablespoon of vanilla extract, pinch of cinnamon, pinch of nutmeg, and she went ahead and mixed all of that together into a beautiful custard. And then she put the plums and arranged them beautifully around the crust, put them into a 375-degree oven. They were sugar-coated for about 20 minutes until the juices were rendered. Took it out. The pie crust isn't baked yet. It's still a little raw. And then poured that custard of cream and eggs and sugar and vanilla and cinnamon and nutmeg in and baked it 25 to 30 minutes or until the custard was set, and then removed it out of the oven and let it chill. It's best to do it the day before or early morning to eat that night, and then you dust it with about 1 cup of powdered sugar right as it goes to the table. It is exquisite, y'all. That recipe is on the website. And my super moist fruitcake. This makes 6 4-pound cakes, which means you can give them away as gifts. And it's right on the website. I'm giving it out right here. And it is the best fruitcake you can possibly get. Anyway, y'all, all the recipes on the website, as well as our German Christmas cookies. And we thank you so much for being with us today, and especially Isabel as well. She was really great. So, y'all, happy holidays and stay safe out there. We want to see you around for Christmas. Somebody's waiting for your gift. See you next week.